Yep. This is Mark Roberts. It is March the 11th, 2010, and I'm interviewing Gary Risen. Okay, Mr. Risen, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Military.
And before that, where you came from, when you joined?
Well, I got into the service in May of 1971, and I joined the 18th Convalescent Center in Lexington, Kentucky, out on Georgetown Pike. I stayed in the Army Reserves for 6 years, till May of 1977. At that point, I had no interest in staying in the military at all. I was through. You actually didn't have enough money to make me to help me stay in the military. I got out of the military. Later on, got into some businesses. It was 1988 that I lived up on Maryland Avenue here in Frankfort, Kentucky, and it was across from what was a National Guard unit, the Army National Guard unit, the 973rd Dental Detachment. Since I had a dental MOS from the reserves as a dental tech, I went ahead and they were getting ready. I'd go over and see a good friend of mine every day. And he was trying to get me to come back into the service. And I said, no, I'm too interested, but I'd go over and talk to him. Well, they had a trip coming up to Bolivia, South America, humanitarian. And he said, Gary, if you come on in, I can get you, I'd still get all your passports, you'd still go, you'd still keep the same rate, pick up. So I went ahead and I signed up for 6 years. So I could go to Bolivia, South America. And went to Bolivia, South America, had a ball. And after coming back, I still stayed in the dental detachment. While in the dental detachment, we had a lady that transferred out of the dental detachment and joined the 475th MASH Hospital over at Boone. I think her name was Jennifer McDonald, I think it was. But anyways, I'd have to go back and double check it. Back then, when Desert Storm was coming around and they activated the 475th MASH unit, she decided she did not want to go be deployed. So she fought to toenail and was not going to be deployed. So they called back over to the 973rd and they were asking somebody, you know, they needed the dental tech to go to fill that spot for the hospital. I had lunch with my wife, and I came out, and Jim come out to the fence, and he hollered there to kiss me while I was getting in the car. I was over to another friend of mine's house running a gas line for a heater on his back porch. And Jim said, I need somebody to go to Saudi. And I said, well, if you can't find anybody, to holler at me. And I'd have let it go. My wife said, what are you doing? And I said, well, if they can't find somebody else to go, well, I'd go. Well, 3 o'clock that afternoon, I got a phone call that I had been transferred, come back over to the 973rd and process out of the 973rd, that I had to report to the 475th the next day that I was being transferred to go to Saudi Arabia. So I looked at that and I said, man, what a whooping. you just off your hat, you say something, the next minute you're off and running. So I went ahead and went over to the 475th. I went with them to Desert Storm. Can we take a break? Yeah.
What was that?
You'd just been assigned.
Okay. So we went ahead and I think when I got deployed, we had to go to Fort Knox and spend about 30 days. I probably spent every night coming back and forth to the house. And they got to where they found out I was going, they would take about two or three of us, and two or three of us would take turns driving up from Fort Knox back here to Frankfort every night. And it worked out pretty good. And I think it was November the 2nd, or January the 2nd, when we got deployed in 90. We left to go to Saudi Arabia. While I was there,
did you fly straight through, or?
I'm almost positive that we flew. Can't remember. I remember coming back. We stopped in Bangor, Maine, because I got out. When I got touched the ground, I kissed the ground. But now I can't remember exactly flying. I'm sure we flew out of Louisville, and I most likely might have been straight on over. Okay. While we were in Saudi Arabia waiting to be deployed on into Iraq, and it just seemed the longest time like it was going to be over with, and we weren't going anywhere. So after a short period of time, they decided to deploy. So they deployed us and give us a mission in Iraq. We went, we stayed approximately a week, and they decided to pull us back to Saudi Arabia, that it was almost going to be over with, and they wouldn't need anything. After we came back to Saudi Arabia, we were on our way coming home. And then we had started turning all this stuff in, packing everything back up, and they came down orders again that we were going back. So we went back to the exact same location that we had left before and set up the MASH hospital unit. In setting up the MASH hospital unit, since we hadn't seen that many casualties, and I was a dental tech, and there wasn't a whole lot of need for a dental tech, the hospital unit, when they brought it out of Germany, was missing items like ramps and a bunch of other things. So I started building ramps in the hospital to where you could go from the ISOs up from the tentage area and the ISOs. The sinks, they had a watering system, so somebody went from Iraq back to Saudi Arabia and bought a whole bunch of piping and fittings and all stuff, and I put in a gravity flow water system from a 20,000 gallon bladder. The tractor and trailers would bring the water and put it in this 20,000 gallon bladder, and so I put a gravity system and put the T's in it, brought it over to these little portable sinks to where nobody had to pack water, and you just had to turn a valve on, fill up the 5 gallon jug, but nobody had to pack the water. And then it would go on down to the laundry unit where they had like 6 3,000 gallon onion skin bladders to run the hospital laundry unit. So I would do that, whatever needed to be done around. I repaired cots. People would break down their cots. They would drag them over. I'd saw them down, put new rivets in them, take them apart, salvage out a part of one, and build them, put it together a good cot. Even had a major that couldn't fit on the cot because that major was close to 300 pounds. And I ended up building him a bed out of plywood. I took a bunch of lumber and built him a bed out of plywood. He packed that bed every time we'd go somewhere. That bed was put up on top of a 100 kW generator or up on top of a 5-ton, and he packed that major, packed that bed with him. And it was, I know we were in Cobalt tires before we actually went into the desert. Down at port, all this lumber, there was a biggest mountain of lumber, and I went to Colonel Donner and I said, we could use some of that lumber. And he looked at it and said, hey, what are you going to do? Where are you going to put it? And I said, you see those 100 kW generators we're pulling? I said, we're going to stack it on top of those generators, and here come the Leadbetters on down the road with all this lumber strapped to those generators. And sure enough, when we got to where we were going, you have wood to build stuff. And it worked out pretty good, because you're not going to get plywood and you're not going to get 2x4s out in the middle of the desert. But those KW generators had a big stack of lumber on each one of them coming over. So we were able to build the ramps and build the stuff, the metal ramps that were left in, I reckon, Germany. We had stuff to build them out of. So we had saws, a carpentry box, so we built what we needed out of them.
So was your background in construction before? Or?
Yeah, I sort of informed. The house I live in now, that 10-bedroom house that I told you is 6,400 square feet, I designed it, I built it, I poured the concrete walls, I framed it, I set the trusses, and I never built a house before in my life. I'd worked on some, but I never, actually did it. Which is not always the best way, because I spent about 2 or 3 years building that house, and if I paid it, and had it done, I'd have been in that house a whole lot sooner. But it's still a good feat to know that you started out to do something and you were able to do it. Yeah. Where are we at?
So you were mostly doing construction over there, it sounds like.
Sounds like construction, stuff like this. There was not that much medical going on. I think they started working on the Kurds at the time, because I know we set up a graveyard over there. We had to set up a graveyard, and we put in, and they were burying body parts and stuff like this at them on some operations. But I actually never, I never worked in the hospital other than going in and working on things. That's about the extent of what I did.
Hmm.
I know one night we had these portable showers that had had three stalls, and in the center one had a 250-gallon tank up on top of it. Well, we had, I think it was around six of these. And they took a backhoe and they went down the middle and they dug a ditch in the sand. Well, then they took the showers and they placed on each side of the ditch down through there. And what they would do is the men would have like the even hours, the women would have the odd hours, and that's how they alternated for taking the showers. And they would take the laundry unit at 6 or 7 o'clock at night, and they would turn the heater on it and a hose and run over and fill that 250-gallon. They would climb up on top and fill that 250-gallon tank with warm water. Well, I remember one night that the guy was in there taking a shower, and he was the only one in there. And where the water run from the showers to the ditch, it eroded all the sand out. And he was in there, and the whole shower fell over with him in it. And next morning came out, so I had to take in. I had to take the tank. It cracked the tank up on top. And I had to go find a welder guy. We welded up the tank, bring it back. We had to pull the shower unit out of the ditch. We cleaned it all off. I put down plastic to where the water would run on plastic, and then it would run on like a trough underneath it to the ditch, so it wouldn't be eroding right up to the shower unit itself. But it was just all sort of things. It was like that. I know it was on Good Friday of Easter, and Colonel Dodner came up to me and asked me. He said earlier that morning, he said my son was over there. He was with the Big Red One out of Kansas, a tank unit. And he had come up to me and he said, I could go up to this place and find out where he was at, where he was located over there, and we would go find him that afternoon. That was on a Good Friday. That later on that afternoon, Colonel Dodner drove up, and I saluted him and I said, sir, I got those coordinates. And he looked at me and said, I got you one better than that. He said, look in the back. I looked in the back and there was my son.
Hmm.
He was at the phone units using the telephone, and my son was there, and they saw each other, and he had winded up with Colonel Dodner. Colonel Dodner took him back and asked his captain, could he spend the weekend with me? And that was one of the best, coolest weekends I did. When he came back, Colonel Dodner got out of his Humvee, and he said, you got the Humvee to Monday. I can have his personal vehicle to Monday. And he said, I want it back Monday morning, and he's got to be back Monday morning. So as soon as you get him back, bring me my Humvee back. And I thought that was pretty cool. But it was made a memorable Easter weekend then. My son came, he got his, we did his clothes, and he got a good hot shower because they'd been taking baths off the back, of, they heat the water off the back of a tank. And that's how they go back there and wash yourself and take a bath, and basically a horse bath in the back of behind the tank. And so he really loved our little shower units that you could actually get in and scrub down pretty good. I gave him towels and I had a cot for him and all. Well, I thought that took him back on Monday morning. I thought that'd be the end of it. I'd see him later on. And come Wednesday here, he came again. His fellow, they needed some parts. And he brought another friend of his with him that was going to get the parts. So they decided to stop off and take a shower. He asked me if I could do his laundry. But we got to see each other at probably a couple times while we were over there, which I thought was pretty unique. We still remember it pretty good. Let's see, what else can we say? Do you have any other questions?
Let's see. So you didn't do any they didn't do any regular dental work on soldiers?
No.
Hmm.
No. It was such a short period of time. It's like now that I'm in the Air Force, there's a big difference between like the Air Force and the Army and the Guard. The Army, you plan on being in theater within 30 to 45 days once you get activated. The Air Force, you're in theater within 24 to 48 hours. Mm-hmm. All your training that you normally do in the Army National Guard, and then you do your training, and then you've got about a month that you would go to a site, and they make sure your dental's up to snuff, they make sure your medical's okay, they make sure your chemical training's all up to speed. They give you like 30 days, you know, to go through all that to beat that training up. The Air Force does it monthly. I mean, it's, you know, your shots, I get up there if my name's on the board for shots, you know. I go right on over to shot clinic and get a shot, whatever it needs. Typhoid, tetanus, whatever, you know, whatever you need, you go get it. Your training, it's all done, your monthly training. It's, you have to constantly, if your chemical training's less than over a year old, or, you know, you're tagged, you're red tagged. And you'll either get that training before you go home, or you'll stay there that weekend till the training's called up.
Hmm.
It's a big difference. It's like the difference between night and day. So,
now, have you been anywhere since Desert Storm?
I don't remember all the dates, but like I said, when Desert Storm, I came back. I went to Bolivia. I came back, and I still stayed in. I transferred as soon as I got back. It wasn't even a week's time. They let me go back to the 973rd. I left the 475th and went back to the 973rd. They did away with the 973rd, and I moved to Depth 5 over to Avon. And what they were doing is taking the hospital unit and shrinking it down. The National Guard had lost the medical aspects of the. Of the mission, and it turned over more toward armor and infantry part of it, and some other state picked up the medical portion. Well, then that new state would have the MASH units and stuff like this. So they were, it was shrinking. If you had a medical MOS, you were needing to find a new home. So it went from like 250 or 60 in the MASH unit down to. I think when I left at 5, it was down to like 52 members.
Hmm.
And it was having to go even smaller. You know? So I was having to find a home. I had, the year before, I had been with a colonel to another med rep in Ecuador, South America. And they were back again the following year going to Ecuador. And he was asking some of the nurses how I was doing. And they told him that I had to find a new home. Well, he said, well, as soon as you tell them to come right on up to Louisville, and they'll give me a home. So it was about when I found that out, and within the next 2 days, I had my paperwork walked through Frankfort, and I was already, I started the next month drilling in. I was out of the Kentucky Army National Guard, and I was in the Kentucky Air National Guard. I went from Army to the Air Force in less than 2 weeks. It was pretty slick. But, and that's where I've been since. While I was with the Army, I think I went to Guyana, South America. I went to Ecuador twice. I went to Bolivia. I've had, with the Air Force, I've been to Peru. I've been to Japan. I've been to Hawaii. I've been to, and matter of fact, in the 9th of April this year, I'll be going to Alaska to work on. We'll fly from commercial from here to Elmendorf up in Anchorage. From there, place I think it's called Kotzebue by C-130, and then we'll fly Black Army, the Alaska Army National Guard helicopters will fly us into little towns, and we'll work on people in these little 200-400 people towns.
Hmm. So we'll do a lot of humanitarian.
Humanitarian. And we'll stay there for, we'll stay in that little town for a week. We'll come back. And then the next week, we'll go to another little town. We're just supposed to be sleeping in schools. But I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I think it'd be good. But anyways.
Do they really appreciate it?
I know all the South American, all the humanitarians like that that we've done, yes, every one of them. When a person goes in and travels, I don't know how many miles, and stands in line all night long Mm-hmm. When we would arrive at these schools to work on these people, there would be 300 and 400, a line with 300 and 400 people. You know they appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know, if your tooth's been hurting you and you've been wanting to get that out, and it's you know, you couldn't get to a dentist, you couldn't pay a dentist, you couldn't, you'd be tickled to death to get rid of that pain.
Yeah.
And that's what a whole lot of these humanitarians were, is just pulling the ones that actually needed to be pulled. This one to Alaska, we'll be doing restorative. They actually have a little health clinic that we will be actually going on, but we'll be working on everybody. It's not, you know, if you've got anything that needs to be done, we'll be trying to do any restorative or pulling or whatever you need. Like I said, we've been to Peru. I can't remember the one place that when it was over with, and the time we'd done been there as long, our week's time was up, and there were still a mass of lines, that it actually got scared that they were going to break the gates down.
Hmm.
And you've got people from whatever country you are, they're sitting there with weapons. You know, you've got, that kid might be 18, 19 years old, he might be 17, can't tell how old he is, but most of the time I couldn't speak Spanish. But you know that weapon, he's like, you could see all the ammo he's packing and the weapon he's packing, and you know it's loaded, you know, that he's there to try to keep order, some somewhat of order. But it's got pretty scary when they grab the gates and start, you know, when they tell them there's no more, and they've been standing there and they want treatment, you know. Got a little scary. I can remember back in Desert Storm, being on guard duty in the foxhole. And you had this M88 detector monitor it's probably about 50, 60 meters out from you. And you're down that foxhole, and I remember that I could swear up down that they was getting closer, or that detector was moving. And you'd look at it, you'd lake off and come back, that big little black box that was about a foot square, about 18 inches tall, you knew it was coming at you. And you just, hey, there's several times I almost shot one of them. Did it, and you keep thinking, you know, is this the time where you're on guard duty? Is somebody going to breach the area that you're supposed to be guarding? You know, and that would be one of the worst things in the world, knowing that a bunch of something happened that shouldn't have happened if you'd been doing what you were supposed to be doing. So, I don't know. But anyways, I've really enjoyed my career with it. Next year to come to an end. I'll turn 60, and then you've got to move on. I left October of 2008, and I was going to go ahead and retire. And I just was going to slide out the door. I went in, and I just made up my mind there one afternoon that it's time for me to go. And you fill in your retirement you enter it all on the computer now. I took my chemical bags, gas mask, and all this stuff. I went and turned it in. Stopped by all the points. I didn't have anything else to do. I cleared the base, and I came back, and it was probably about 4:30, 5 o'clock. And I went and shook a couple people's hands. I said, I don't want anything. It's just time to, you know, fade back into the thing, and I won't be back. They said, what do you mean you won't be back? And I said, well, I would be back. So it by that night, I done had it was the next morning. I done got calls from the commander. She done called up and was saying, you know, trying to talk me, wished that I wouldn't do it. Tell me that, you know, how they wanted to stay. I had called about two or three others that wanted to stay. And I kind of changed my mind and went back again. But it's been all good. It's been all good. Really enjoyed it. And I enjoy it now, you know. When you get to where you don't want to go, you don't want to, you know, make that drive, you don't want to play the game, you don't want to, you know, then it's time to turn around and go to the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it ain't quite got there yet, you know. So I still enjoy it.
What's the funniest thing that ever happened to you?
Shoot, I don't know. There's been quite a few things in this time we've laughed about. I probably, when the fella fell in the shower, that was probably the one I laughed at probably the hardest. When the guy rolled over and he came out of the shower. probably the most startled I was is, remember I was mentioning those shires were even for the men and odd for the women, or they might change it around. You just had to pay attention. I was in that shire, and here come a lady that one of the nurses came in there. And I said, ma'am, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong place. She said, no, if you don't mind, I don't mind, but you got partitions in there. But that's one of the most awkward feeling things that I've had in a long time. You're sitting there taking a shower, and all you can see is the heads. You can't see the bodies. But I'm just saying, it was the funniest thing. You're sitting there taking a shower, and you start, oh, no, am I in the wrong time? Did I get it wrong? She said, no. She said, you don't mind, I don't. I just said, we'll stay around to the next time, right? But anyway, and you've got a little flashlight up there. That's all you're taking a shower, right? There's no electric or no lights or any of that stuff, too. But that's one of the funniest. I took two showers. I'd take one in the morning, I'd take one at night. Now, the one in the morning, there's about three to four of us that would go up and take one and had to have a shower in the morning. And that water was cold. I mean, that water was just like ice. And there's sometimes you'd had frost on your tits over there while we were over there. So you can know that water was pretty good. Yeah. That water doesn't chill down and sit up there all night long. But we'd put it on, take a quick shower, and come on out of there, you know. But it made you start the day right.
So what was it like, you know, just the weather and stuff?
There was one of the places when we were going back to Iraq, that we had to go through like a flood, where it had rained so hard that desert, it was, we actually went through, you know, 2 or 3 feet of water out there in the middle of the desert. You know, and sure, in an hour or two, it was all gone. But I mean, it's like that. Like I just mentioned before, there would be, there was several times there was frost on the windows and frost on the tents. And other times you'd be in short sleeves, you know, a t-shirt. So it's, you know, in that short several month time, it, you know, it could be real cold or it could be, you know, real warm. Dust storms, you know, when that came, when that would come, you just go in, and I don't care how tight the tent was sealed up, there was a fine layer of dust over everything. Now, everything on the inside had just a fine layer of dust over from one of the dust storms and stuff. I had mentioned before when we took and we went to Iraq and was going to set it up, and we didn't set the hospital up. We turned around, went back to Saudi Arabia. We left some stuff out there. And in that month's time, when you come back, it is neat how the desert just absorbs it. It just, when you looked at it, there was a little hump, a little mound, say, over that box. You could go over and kick that box, and that box was, there's what you left the last time. Nature has a way of just healing itself, and you would never, you know, that was just in a matter of 2 or 3 weeks. Wow. You imagine a year, you know, you'd never know it was there. It'd be completely just gone. Back to nature. But anyways, is there anything else?
Not unless you've got something to say. Anything you'd like to say, or
don't
you had a, sound like you had a pretty good experience?
I always had a good experience. No matter what you do, you'd try to look for the positive in it. Or somewhere. You'll find something positive just about in everything.
Well, pretty interesting that you serve in the military and do primarily humanitarian work.
Yeah, I'd like to see more of it done, you know, here in the States. Now, this to Alaska, I think that's wonderful. I almost got put on one. It was the 3rd of this month. I almost got to go to Thailand, and that would have been another trip. I signed up for that one. It was on a Friday when it came out. I put my name in that I would do it on over the weekend. On Monday, did we have a holiday? What's the last holiday we had this year?
President's Day.
President's Day. The federal government was closed, but the state, we worked. Okay, Tuesday morning, I was on for it. That morning, they said, you know, yep, they'd go it. And then but that afternoon, Pac F out in Hawaii decided to use a dentist and the techs out of the Air Force Base there in Hawaii. And they were going to pull them out, and they would be going. because then they wouldn't have to pay my airline fare and salaries for taking me to Thailand for a couple of weeks. But I sure would have enjoyed it. Never been to Thailand. But anyways, had a pretty good time. Been pretty interesting. And I would do it again, you know. I would gladly do it again. Anything else, Mark?
I think that's
I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I'm not too good at that.